And we are on air right now for our Fan for Racing Radio. This is Monday night, March the 20th. We are talking Atlanta, NASCAR Race Review, and our Hot Topic Sound-Off tonight. Now, in our first half hour, we will start with the latest short track news and updates from the ARCA Menards, the ARCA East, and the ARCA West series. And then we'll review our NASCAR Truck and Xfinity Series races at Atlanta Motor Speedway at the top of the hour. Then, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, our guest, ARCA driver Tanner Reif, will be joining us. He's from Loudon Jackson Motorsports, and we're going to be talking about his win out at Phoenix Raceway a week or so ago. Now, afterward, we will review the NASCAR Cup Series race at Atlanta, and we'll end this episode with our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off with the Fan for Racing crew, and it sounds like we've got a full house once again tonight. So joining me shortly is our co-host for tonight, and that is Sal Segala. Hopefully he will be calling in soon here. I'll send him a little note just to remind him so that he can come on the show with us. So, okay, so with that, let's go ahead and get started with some of the short track news that we have from today. There's quite a bit. And I'm going to start with the dirt track racing news that we have here. Let me pull up my notes here. Okay, now Friday's planned World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series race at Williams Grove Speedway was called off this week because of rain. So they posted that over at theworldofoutlaws.com if you want to know more about that. But a poor forecast also squelched a planned Lucas Oil Late Model Series race this weekend out at Atomic Speedway and Brownstone Speedway. So let's see. And even more cancellations this weekend. The World of Outlaws Late Model Series races at Boyd Speedway and Smoky Mountain Speedway as well. So really sad to hear that those races were postponed. So we'll hopefully get more information on that as time goes on here as far as when. Actually, you can go to theworldofoutlaws.com or lucasdirt.com and find out when those races are rescheduled for. Okay, moving on to short track racing. The South Boston Town Council has denied a rezoning request that would have added a residential area next to South Boston Speedway. Matt Reaver writes about that over at Short Track Scene if you'd like to read more about that. Checking back and forth to see if Sal is here yet. I don't see him as of yet, so we'll keep looking for that. And then, let's see here. Also, penalties were issued, and we talked a little bit about this last week. Penalties were issued to Bubba Pollard and Boris Djokovic after their altercation at Five Flags Speedway on March the 11th. Matt Weaver, again, writes about that if you want to read more about it over at Short Track Scene. We did talk about it briefly on our radio show last Thursday. But the race itself was nothing short of memorable. Again, Matt Weaver talks about that race over at Short Track Scene. And there are some official results from the St. Patrick's Day 150 at Hickory Motor Speedway. That race was won by Cole Butcher, and you can read about that over at Racing America. So, and then they also take a look back at that ASA Stars National Tour opener over at Racing America as well. So definitely check those out. I want to also just bring up some of the articles that are up over at Racing America. Jonathan Davenport The 2022 version's season put dirt track racer Jonathan Davenport in a league of his own, yet many don't know that man behind the Superman moniker that he's actually known for. So if you want to learn more about Jonathan Davenport, who's going to be racing in the in NASCAR coming up here soon, you can learn more about him over at flowracing.com. They have a video there that's about 40 minutes long, so I'd highly recommend that for everybody. Also, the Cars Tour is implementing the choose cone for restarts, so that's another thing that is kind of new here, and something for fans to be on the lookout for. Okay, I'm not sure where Sal is today. So I'm going to try to text him. I texted him on Teams, and I'm going to text him now on his phone and see if I can figure out where he's at. Okay, apparently he's caught up in some traffic, and he says he's almost home. So hopefully we'll hear from Sal soon. Okay, so some more news on the short track scene of things is MAV TV will air the ASA Stars National Tour race on Monday night. So that's kind of big news. If you have MAV TV, you'll be able to watch that race Monday night. That's tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. And that would be the Sunshine State 200 from Five Flags Speedway. There'll be a same-day re-air at 11 p.m. Eastern. So if you have MAV TV, you'll be able to watch that race right there. So stay tuned for that as well. Okay, Racing America. Also, they do put up the unofficial race results for the M-Better 400 and the points report from the M-Better 400. They also have the entry list for the Cup Series race out at COTA that's coming up this weekend. And there's a feature article at Racing America. Jordan Taylor has a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity at COTA. Definitely looking forward to watching Jordan Taylor race in NASCAR's Cup Series. He's an IMSA champion, and he's going to jump behind the wheel of the number 9 Hendrick Motorsports car out at Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. So I think that's going to be huge, and definitely looking forward to seeing him on the track. I mentioned some things over at Flow Racing. Let's see here. Jimmy Blewett is returning to full-time competition out at Stafford Speedway. So also there's drivers reacting to Jonathan Davenport's $2 million season. So it's only about 5 minutes long, so it's a short view if you want to check that out. That's over at Flow Racing as well. So there's a lot going on in the short track world for fans to check out. There's some NHRA Gator Nationals Pro Modified photos that are up over there if you want to check those out. And an event preview for the PDRA Summit Racing Equipment East Coast Nationals. That will be March 30th to April 1st. So they're looking forward to another big season in the PDRA Summit Racing. Okay. Let's see. Okay, lots to look at here. If you're looking for results from the weekend, there's lots of results that are posted over at Flow Racing as well, including the 2023 Cars Tour at Southern National Motorsports Park and the Short Track Super Series at Sellings Grove Speedway. So you can see those replays and catch those results over at Flow Racing. So definitely looking to see that as well. All right. There's a lot going on in the racing world, and we're going to move over to some updates here from Short Track Scene, because they also do a great job. If you're wondering what happened to Matt Weaver, he was over at Racing America. He now is at Short Track Scene. And the SRL National, the Rattler 250 took place this weekend, and it's a clean sweep for Bubba Pollard, if you want to check that out. And Ty Majeski was actually challenged to start from the rear of the field. He took up that challenge and raced from the back of the field. So that was kind of fun to watch this weekend as well. Also, Butcher Sweeps the Pass Easter Bunny double feature. Carter Langley sweeps the Sobo twin openers. There's commentary, haul up, let ASA stars cook. So that's pretty cool. Let's see. There's also a lot going on over Hockey Shaw shares the ACT Hickory Road Trip victories. That's the American Canadian Tour. And we talked about the Pro All-Star Series where Butcher swept the pass Easter Bunny double feature with that. So, again, lots to look at over at Short Track Scene from Matt Weaver and the folks over there. So we always try to encourage fans to go to those websites to keep up with what is happening in the world of short track racing. I'm going to move over to ARCA Racing now. I'm going to check and see if Sal's here yet. Okay, ARCA Racing. There is this Thursday, Jay Huesman and I will be doing our preview of the ARCA Menards Series East season opener that will take place this Saturday out at Firefly Speedway. So definitely looking forward to previewing that race. It's the Pensacola 200 this Saturday, March the 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can watch that race, by the way, via live streaming at Flow Racing. Keep in mind that ArcaRacing.com always has a radio coverage taking place during the race as well. At their Race Central, they also provide live updates directly from the track. So you can keep up with everything that's going on in that race over at ArcaRacing.com. Now, the next race for the ARCA Menards Series, well, let's go to ARCA West first because they're going to race before that. The West Coast Stock Car Motorsports Hall of Fame 150 will take place on April the 1st at 10 p.m. Eastern Time out at Irwindale Speedway. Again, that race will be available via live streaming at Flow Racing, and you'll be able to listen to the radio and follow all the action at Race Central at ArcaRacing.com. Then the ARCA Menards Series, they'll be racing the General Tire 200 on April the 22nd, at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time out at Talladega Super Speedway. Now, that race is going to be broadcast live on Fox Sports 1. So a lot of racing coming up here on ARCA Menards Series, for all three ARCA Menards Series. And you don't want to miss any of the action. If you want to know where to watch what races or how to watch all the races that are coming up, they have a broadcast link over at Racing America that not only tells you where what TV channel you can watch, what the start time is, but they tell you where the live stream is and where you can listen on the radio. So you definitely want to check that out. Okay, articles that you can check over at ARCA Racing Eckes here in Logano, headline a big weekend for ARCA graduates at Atlanta. And our guest is coming up at 9:30 tonight. They've got Tyler Reif's Phoenix win, a notable point in the ARCA Menards Series West Series history. So catch up with what that's all about over at ARCA Racing as well. The two big winners so far in the ARCA Menards Series are Greg Van Alts, who won out at Daytona, and then Tanner Reif, who won at Phoenix Raceway. Sammy Smith and William Byron are also among the ARCA platform graduates who enjoyed success early this season. So you can read about them as well over at ARCARacing.com. Let's take a look at the points in each of these series. Sal is here now, so I'm going to bring him into the queue. First of all, I see you made it through all the traffic.
Yeah, hi, Sharon. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Man, I don't know. This doesn't matter. Let's just go.
Okay.
I don't know where we're at. 5:30.
Well, I was just getting ready to talk about the points for all three series. Of course, ARCA Menards Series East, we don't have any points yet. ARCA West, we have just one race. So I was going to cover the ARCA Menards Series points. I know we've done that before, but in case somebody hasn't heard about it yet, I wanted to cover those points again. I don't know where you are as far as setting yourself up.
I just walked in the door.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and cover it then.
Right now,
Greg Van Alts tops the list for the ARCA Menards Series standings for the 2023 season after two races. They're showing Frankie Munoz in second place. He's just 10 points back. Then it's Tony Cosentino, 23 points back. Jesse Love, 26 points back, and Christian Rose, 27 points back. That rounds out your top five. The next five drivers are Jack Wood, our guest coming up at 9:30 tonight, Tyler Reif, Connor Mosack, Andres Perez de Lara, and Tony Breidinger. Now, two of those drivers have only raced one ARCA Menards Series race, and one of those includes Tyler Reif and Connor Mosack. They only have one race in that ARCA Menards Series. They're racing primarily, I think, in the ARCA West or ARCA East, so that may be a limited schedule for them as far as the ARCA Menards Series goes. But they had good enough finishes to put them into the top 10 here. So that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I always, on this ARCA Menards thing, this NASCAR took over. I'm still a firm believer that they should just let them have their own points, you know, instead of mixing them like this. Because it gets confusing for the, you know, for the normal everyday fan, and I think it, you know, since because technically Tyler's not running ARCA Menards Series period. It just happened that they ran it in Phoenix, you know,
right.
Before they used to have, and what happened before where the cars were different. You know, there are two different cars. You know, they weren't the same cars, and now they kind of are. So it just made things a little bit more difficult, but Frankie Munoz sitting at second points.
I'm sorry, I
like Frankie. He's a really good guy. I like Frankie. I got to know him real well when he raced out here at Urindale, but that's just part of the, you know, the way ARCA hasn't set up anymore. So
exactly. It can't change it, so we got to roll with it. So.
Yeah, exactly. We can't change it, but it's just, you know, it's just, it is what it is.
Okay. Well, looking at the West Series, you got Tyler Reif, of course, is in the number one spot. 4 points behind him is Landon Lewis. Then it's Bradley Erickson, Andres Perez de Lara. Kyle Keller rounds out the top five. Frankie Munoz, Connor Jones, Leland Honeyman, Trevor Huddleston, and Greg Van Dalst round out the top 10. And again, it is somewhat confusing because I don't know if Greg Oltz is going to race all three series or not. But I know he's running full-time in the ARCA Menards series this year. So this will start to settle out as more races are in the books. We know that the real hot and heavy time for the ARCA Menards series is during the summer months. So I would expect by the time we get to the summer months that a lot of this will work itself out and we'll have a better feel for how this is going to play out for each of these three series.
Exactly, because right now it doesn't make a whole lot of sense other than the fact that, you know, that the, that the ARCA Menards is running, you know, they ran their first race.
Remember there was a time, Sal, when they used to do the combination event in Iowa that we thought it was pretty cool to have that combination event.
Yeah, but the combination was just, it was ARCA East, ARCA West. It wasn't the ARCA Menards series because, once again, they ran different cars. So you could run a West car with the ARCA car in the ARCA series, just like you couldn't run an East car in the ARCA series. And now the way they have it, well, the way they did it for that first race, they just let everybody basically bring their car out under a roast package. And this is what was shook out after the first two races, which was Daytona and Phoenix.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you do want to catch up with everything that's going on in the ARCA Menards series, go to arcaracing.com and click the news link. They do have quite a few articles there. You'll see that Tyler Reif actually headed up the led the practice results. I believe he started on the pole and finished on the number one spot. So it was a good night for Tyler Reif. Also, from Sunrise to High Point, Trevor Huddleston is going to carry on Bob Brumcati's West Series. So that's really good, cool news that Trevor Huddleston is going to be racing this year.
Yeah, and actually, Tim Huddleston made an announcement on Saturday, which I already knew. They haven't made it official yet, but Tim made it official Saturday with that Jake Bowman is going to take over the second car for High Point Racing. So it'll be Trevor and Jake Bowman that'll be teammates for the rest of the
season. Any relation to Alex?
No, Bowman. Alex is Bowman, and Jake is Bowman, B-O-L.
Oh, B-O-L. Okay.
Yeah.
It sounded exactly the same when you said that. Okay.
Yeah, no, one's Bowman and one's Bowman.
Okay, got it. Okay,
yeah,
so we'll look forward to watching Jake race over there with High Point Racing with Trevor Huddleston as his teammate. So very cool. Again, there's the race results from the race at Phoenix. You'll hear about Frankie Munoz, Greg Van Alst, Tyler Reif, Sammy Smith, all of that news. And if you want to break it down by series, they have it broken down there as well between the ARCA East and the ARCA West. So a lot of good information at arcaracing.com for anybody who wants to catch up with the season for whatever reason.
Yes.
Okay. I already covered the short track and dirt track news. Did you see anything in there that you wanted to make sure you mentioned? I know Bubba Pollard won that Rattlesnake 250.
Yeah, actually, he won the both. He won the Baby Rattler on Saturday, and then he won the Rattler 250 on Sunday. So he went
swept them.
He went back. He swept them, yeah. One was in a pro late. The other was in a super late. So that was good for Bubba because he had had that. The week before, he had gotten dumped by Casey Roderick, and that's where all the controversy came in with on the
right. They had those penalties.
Yeah, they had the penalties after, which I think were pretty didn't make sense at all. I don't know. It's Bob Sargent needs to him and Ricky Brooks really need to get together, but it'll never happen. And Ricky just he was, you know, they need to get together and unify. Well, yeah, and you know, and they both run a tight ship, but I mean, when something like that happens, you don't go and start fining your drivers because then now they're putting money out that they really don't have. I mean, these guys, they're not Cup drivers, so they don't have a big checkbook, you know, or a big sponsor that can pay that kind of money and a fine when it's racing.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen it time after time, you know, so I mean, you start doing that and you're going to start pushing drivers away because they're going to be afraid to race the way they're used to racing because they're going to think, okay, if we race, you know, we're not going to catch a fine, you know, and, you know, you got to remember this is short track racing. It's not NASCAR.
Yeah, but was some of it because they approached the driver after the race, or was it what happened on the track?
No, it was what happened after the race, but still, it happens all the time.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
It happens all the time, you know.
Thanks for the commentary.
Yeah,
I didn't really comment on it because I didn't see it.
They fight all the time. Oh, no.
So you think that's acceptable
time,
to fight all the time?
I don't think it's acceptable. Oh no, it's not acceptable. But I mean, you don't run away. This is the first race for that series, so you don't go out and fine your golden child. Well, your golden child basically. Because I mean, Bubba's the series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to push him away. I mean, that's money.
You expect your golden person to kind of behave like a professional, though, too, right?
Yeah, but you also expect the series to send the driver back that hit that, dumped him, and not let him keep a spot. And that's
mm-hmm.
where a lot of that came back because they didn't send the driver back because all of a sudden they made a rule that says, oh, well, the yellow flag was out, so we can't send them back. It happens all the time. We see them send them back. You know, whenever somebody takes out the lead driver, you know, they'll send them back. You know, but
okay.
You know, hey, you know, I mean, this you got to remember too, it's short track racing. It's not NASCAR. So
yeah, but
you
this
can't
is
start
a national
taking...
series, so I think the expectation is maybe a little bit higher than your local short track.
Not really
these
sure.
These are drivers that are coming from all over the country. To race in these races, so
exactly, and they're on limited schedule. They're on limited money. I mean, they don't have the big money like JGR and RCR. You know, to just throw around like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is where they're cutting their teeth. This is where you know, racers are racers.
So maybe
you know,
the fine should be less than what it is.
Maybe it shouldn't have been a fine at all. Maybe they should have said, you know. Talk to them first and, you know, tell them, hey, you know what, look at, you know, we're not going to tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the first race for the season, for the series, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
Yeah, I guess
you know.
They chose this way to kind of make their statement. But I hear your points, and I agree with them. I'm playing devil's advocate here to kind of give another side of the story here. But
none of the drivers liked it.
Yeah, well,
the drivers in the series liked it.
Then they don't
they
show up
for
the next race. if they don't like it.
You know what? If he keeps doing that, I'm telling you right now, he ain't going to have a series because no one's going to show up because they're going to say, why are we going to show up and, you know, and give this guy money? You know, it's bad enough that we hardly have money to race. You know, we're broke.
But
you know, then
why are grown men going out and fighting with other drivers? I don't really understand that either.
Sure, you haven't been around the short track scene. That's why. I'm sure you've heard the Bowman Gray stories.
Oh,
you
I'm
know,
sure.
About, you know,
I know there's all kinds of
know,
stories about grown men fighting with each other. I'm just saying, as a woman, I guess I don't understand that either.
You know, if there's a promoter back east that said, you know what, if you're going to fight on the front stretch so everybody can see it. He goes, because if you fight in the pit where no one can see it, then he goes, there's going to be penalties, which, you know, we're going to sit you down. We're going to sit you down a race or two. But if you fight in front of the stands where people can see it, you know what, then you're good to go.
Okay.
So they want everybody to see it. You know, they don't want, you know, and, you know.
Okay, well, commentary time is over. I don't mean to cut you short. But we do have to kind of move on.
That's fine, yeah.
Okay. We're going to move on to the Craftsman Truck Series and the race at Atlanta Motor Speedway this past weekend. Actually, it took place on Saturday. The Freight 208. The race winner was Christian Eckes at the age of 22, driving the number 19 Napa Auto Care Chevrolet for team owner Bill McAnally and crew chief Charles Denneke. It was his second victory in 71 Truck Series races and his first victory and third top 10 finish this season. This is his first victory and second top 10 finish in three races at Atlanta. Nick Sanchez, how about that? The rookie posted his first top 10 finish in one race at Atlanta Motor Speedway. It's his first top 10 finish this season. And John Hunter Nemechek finished third, posting his third top 10 finish in six races at Atlanta. Okay. Also, it was a wild night in the Truck Series. I was beginning to wonder if they were going to get it finished. Christian Eckes, though, finished where he started in Saturday's race at Atlanta Motor Speedway with a lot of turmoil in between. It went into overtime. Christian Eckes chose the bottom lane and front row position for the restart on lap 136 of 137 laps. He won the opening stage and led 35 of 137 laps. Again, it was Nick Sanchez and John Hunter Nemechek finishing in second and third, followed by Bailey Curry, Ben Rhodes, Matt DiBenedetto, Chase Purdy, Timmy Hill, Matt Crafton, and Jack Wood to round out the top 10. Stage 2 was won by Matt Crafton. It was his first stage win since the 2020 season. There were 17 lead changes among 9 drivers with an event-high 11 cautions for 58 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 92.344 miles per hour. Your thoughts about our top 10 here, Sal?
Yeah, you know what, I've seen the first two stages, and then I had to leave. I had to go to the track because we ran Irwindale Saturday night, and I didn't know I was going to miss all that, but it was neat to see Matt Crafton win that second stage, man. He really had a fight for that win. To get that second stage win, you know, like you said, the rookie Nick Sanchez finishing second, and I was going to come home and finish watching the race.
I apologize.
I got home too late. Yeah, I got home too late and couldn't watch it. And, you know, I missed it. I missed Christian. I have a recording. I'm still going to watch it this week.
Okay,
see
cool.
Christian Eckes get that win. And actually, that was that truck that he was in was the truck that
McAnally Hilgerman.
Yeah, well, it was the one that Derek Krause has been running for the past 3 years with them.
Yeah, this so was when, the very when, first win for McAnally Hilgerman,
yeah.
Too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that was very cool to see.
Bill's first truck win, yeah. So, but, yeah, this was the truck that that Derek Krause was running that couldn't seal the deal. And Christian Eckes comes out and seals the deal. And then, of course, you know, you have his teammate, you know, Jake Garcia, you know, finishing 18th. You know, so I'm sure we're going to see a lot. We're going to see a lot of big things out of that team this year. I'm sure we'll probably hopefully see Jake Garcia possibly get into victory lane too. But you know, you go up and down the list, you know, and you see, you know, who's, you know, John Hunter coming in from the Cup Series, you know, to run the trucks, you know, and you know, it was you know, it's neat, you know, it's a good solid top 10 finish for Jack Wood, you know, after his heartbreak at Phoenix in the ARCA West Series, you know. So
yeah.
And then Tyler
I was real happy for Nick Sanchez though too, from Rev Racing, and it was a great showing for him in this race as well. We don't see Bailey Curry up there very often, so that was a little bit of a surprise, and a good finish for Matt DiBenedetto.
Yeah, and actually, Ty Majeski flew from the right after the race, flew to South Alabama to race in the Rattler.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see him do that too. They were surprised at how fast he was able to get down there. Okay. There were a few things that happened throughout this race. The number, let me make sure I get the right number here, truck number 34, Keith McGee, was out after 7 laps because of a transmission. Mason Maggio was out after 52 laps because of an accident. Corey Heim was caught up in an early accident. A lot of people had him picked as their race winner. He was caught up on lap 83 in that accident. Caden Honeycutt finished laps down. He was running, but Lawless Allen also caught up in an accident on lap 126. He was out, and Carson Hocifar was out on lap 127. Kobe Howard had a track bar problem, taking him out of the race on lap 134. So several drivers finished laps down. Most of the drivers finished all 137 laps, 25 drivers that finished all 137 laps. It did finish under caution, but man, they broke the record for number of cautions in this race.
Oh, yeah, it did. It sounded like it was never going to, they're going to have to run the Xfinity and the trucks together to get the race again.
I know. It was really amazing. At first, I wondered if the track was just overly slick or what was going on there. We had kind of some of the same issues in the Xfinity Series race. But by the time we saw the Cup Series race on Sunday, it seemed like the track was pretty much toned down. I don't know if it was the difference in the track or the difference in the fact that we had veterans racing on the track.
Well, a lot of it, too, was that, you know, qualifying, of course, got rained out. Yeah, so
yep.
the track went green, you know, so it took a while to, you know, for the track to get rubbered up again, you know, for them to get a good racing groove out there again, especially with the tire compounds they're using. So,
yeah.
You know, that played a huge factor in the way the racing went with the trucks and Xfinity. By the time Sunday came around, you know, the track was pretty well rubbered up, you know, so the cars, you know, were able to, have a little bit more grip and more luck out there.
Okay, let's go ahead and move over to the points report, Sal. And after 3 races, things are starting to kind of sort themselves out here.
Yeah, after 3 races, you got Christian Eckes, who's leading the points, who already has a race win. Still holding in the second spot is Matt Crafton. Third is Ty Majeski. Fourth is Ben Rhodes. And round out the top 5 is Zane Smith. After that, we got Grant Insinger in 6th, Matt Benedetto in 7th, Chase Purdy in 8th, Carson Kosovar in ninth, and Tanner Gray round off the top 10 with Tyler Akram and Corey Heim right there in 11th and 12th spot.
Okay.
The
Nick Sanchez is the highest rookie in 13th.
Rookie, 13th.
Okay, so it's pretty tight up at the top between third and first place is only 8 points. And if you drop back to fifth place, it's only 15 points separating the first place driver from the fifth place driver. So it's pretty tight battles there. Points are really going to be important, I think, this season. Especially in this truck series.
Yeah, and you got to remember too, Christian Eckes and Zay Smith already have a win, so they're already locked in. So
you
got to basically take the points down from, you know, second place on down right now. But I mean, we've still got a lot more racing, a lot more drivers are going to win. I'm sure we'll have multiple race winners this year, season again. So.
Right.
You know, this,
just
this
to
point,
clarify,
yeah,
Kyle Busch won that third race of the three races.
Yeah. Yeah, but then we all know he's not eligible for the
correct
for a championship or anything in a truck series. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. As far as the playoff points, Christian Eckes is leading with 7, and Zane Smith is 1 point behind with 6, and you know these two, especially Zane, he's going to be going after every stage point he could possibly get. You know,
yes,
he knows how important they are.
He's a defending champion, so he wants to defend that championship title for sure.
Oh, yeah, he wants to be able to come. He wants to be able to come in back-to-back.
I know we're a little bit ahead, but I'm going to go ahead and get into the Xfinity series here so that we've got time to kind of build up a lead-in to our guest coming on at 9:30. The Raptor King of Tough 250 was run on Saturday as well in the Xfinity series. Austin Hill, at the age of 28, was the winner. He drives the number 21 Bennett Transportation Chevrolet, Richard Childress Racing, and his crew chief is Andy Street. It was his fifth victory in 53 Xfinity Series starts and his third victory in fifth top 10 finish this year. He's had an amazing season. It's his second victory and third top 10 finish in three races at Atlanta Motor Speedway as well. Daniel Hemric finished second, posting his fifth top 10 finish in eight races at Atlanta and his third top 10 finish of the season. Ryan Truex posted his third top 10 finish in four races at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Sammy Smith, who finished in 17th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Austin Hill claims another trophy, this time on a super speedway in a race that started in chaos and ended in bedlam on the last lap. He won his third Xfinity Series race of the season, beating Daniel Hemric to the checkered flag. So 5 weeks of racing and 3 wins for Austin Hill. He led 103 of 163 laps. It's his second victory at Atlanta Motor Speedway. 4 of his 5 career victories have come on super speedways. Again, it was Daniel Hemric finishing in second place, followed by Parker Kligerman. Daniel Hemric finished second after he tagged Parker Kligerman coming out of the fourth turn on the final lap to start a big wreck. Ryan Truex again placed in third, followed by Kligerman, taking the checkered flag, sliding backwards in fourth place. And what about Riley Herbst, also involved in the wreck? He ended up with a top 5 finish. Brett Moffitt earned his best finish of the season in sixth. Then it was Josh Berry, John Hunter Nemechek, Sam Mayer, and Justin Haley round out the top 10. Hill won the opening stage while Kligerman earned his first stage win. There were 13 lead changes among 8 drivers, and again, 12 cautions for 68 yellow flag laps. The speed of the race was 91.382, your thoughts about the top 10 at Atlanta Motor Speedway for the Xfinity Series.
Yeah, that was another win for Austin Hill. He's he's really proving, you know what a threat he's going to be for that championship this year. You know, starting off early, you know collecting the wins. You know, hopefully, you know, he keeps the momentum up, you know, when it really counts, you know, at the end of the season. But, you know, for now, you know, to get a jump the way he has, he's having a phenomenal season.
You
know,
yes,
you, like you say, you look up and down, you know, Ryan Herbst continues, to have some good solid weeks in there. You know, I'm sure his win, you know, should be around the corner here pretty soon.
I think he's finished in the top 10 in every race so far.
Yeah, it seems like he has. He's had a lot of good runs this year. He's been solid, so, we'll see what happens, towards the end of the season, you know, when it, you know, makes a chase, you know, how he does in the chase, you know, see if he can pick up a win or two before the chase.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. Okay. Any other thoughts there?
No, that's really it. I mean, Josh Berry, you know, continues, you know, to, you know, be a, you know, a factor, you know, for JR Motorsports and, you know, Sammy Smith, the highest finishing rookie in 17th with Blaine Perkins finishing at 22nd. I think that's Blaine's best finish so far this season.
That's awesome. The margin of victory, just so you know, was 0.085 of a second. That's 85 thousandths of a second. So that's pretty tight. Several accidents in this race. First lap accident took out Joey Gase and Cesar Barcarola. Then you had Garrett Smithley out on lap 11 with Kaz Grala. They both were caught up in an accident, along with Jeffrey Earnhardt on lap 11. Kyle Weatherman was out on lap 26 because of an accident. Josh Williams on lap 33. Sage Karam out on lap 43 because of a radiator. Connor Mosack out on lap 69. Because of an accident, and Justin Allgaier, a lot of people had him picked to win. He was out on lap 77 due to an accident. Lap 127, Chandler Smith had a rear gear issue, taking him out of the race. And on lap 154, Park was out of the race because of an accident. So most cars finished on the lead lap, 25 cars again, finishing on that lead lap. Only one car finished on lap 161, two laps down, still running. So a lot of incidents in this race.
Yeah, it was a lot. And, you know, they, you know, once again, you know, Austin Hill came out on top, you know, to pick up his third win of the season.
Yeah, wasn't that something? And Timmy Hill had a top 10 finish there too, didn't he, or was that the truck race?
I think that was a truck race.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so again, there was some good racing that took place out at Atlanta Motor Speedway this weekend, but with all that rain that they had on Friday, it really affected the racing, I think, on Saturday to a big degree. And I think it was a combination of the track coming in and just having veteran drivers out there on the track that made a difference in the racing, I think, on Sunday. We've got a guest that's going to be coming up here. I know we were going to have him. Oh, let's do the points report before we leave the Xfinity Series.
So for the points, we have Austin Hill, who's leading the points with three wins. Then we have John Hunter Nemechek is second, who also has a win this year. Third is Riley Herbst. Fourth is the highest rookie in Chandler Smith. Fifth is Justin Allgaier. And rounding out the top six is Sam Mayer.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, then we go down to Sammy Smith in seventh, Josh Berry in eighth, Cole Custer in ninth, Daniel Hemric in tenth, Parker Klingerman in 11th, and Sheldon Creed finally moved up into a playoff spot, into the number 12 spot, taking over Brett Moffitt. So, you know, we're starting to see some movement, you know, as the season goes on, and you know, I'm sure that's gonna be that'll probably be the norm, you know, going into the rest of the season, until we get to our first playoff race.
Yeah, it should be noted that John Hunter Nemechek and Riley Herbst are actually tied in points at 202. John Hunter Nemechek gets the edge on that one because of his win. And then also there's a tie between Sammy Smith and Josh Berry. And again, Sammy Smith gets the edge on that one because of his win. So some interesting ties here in that top 12.
Yes, it is. It's very interesting. And, you know, as like I said, you know, as the season goes on, you know, it's just going to get more and more, you know, interesting with what goes on, you know. You know, as far as, you know, shake up in the points and you know, who's in, who's out, you know, for the playoffs.
Without a doubt, it is going to get more interesting. They've got five races in the books already compared to three races for the Truck Series. So they've got a couple more races under their belt. Truck Series has a more abbreviated schedule, so that's kind of part of it as well. But, again, it was kind of a helter-skelter race on Saturday for both the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. And you bring up a good point, Sal, with the fact that they were racing on a very green track. They did not get any practice in because of the rain. And so their first laps on the track were during the race, other than qualifying where they do – well, they didn't even get to do qualifying.
Yeah, they were set by the points because of the rain out.
Yes, because of the rain. They didn't get qualifying in. They didn't get practice in. So the lack of being able to practice, I think, really had an impact on all of that as well. Okay, we've got a guest coming up, Sal, in Tyler Reif, and he won that ARCA Menards Series, ARCA West combination event out at Phoenix Raceway. He was racing against some really good drivers, but I know he's coming up here in a few minutes. Was there anything else that you wanted to make sure we mentioned about Tyler Reif?
No, he's a young up and coming driver, you know, from racing out here in the West Coast, he's racing for Loudon Jackson Racing. He did race, I think, their last two or three races of the ARCA West Series last year with Loudon Jackson,
uh-huh.
You know, before going full time with them this season. So, it's going to be an exciting season for Tyler. I know talking with Matt, they're talking about Tyler racing both the East and the West Series.
Oh,
so
cool.
We'll talk to him a little bit about that and how that's going to play out. We all know Tyler from last year. You know, last couple of seasons, you know, he raced the SRL Southwest Tour Series in a pro late. So,
and he did pretty well there.
Yeah, he did well there, you know, and, you know, he's from Henderson, Nevada, you know, and he gets a lot of his coaching from Noah Gregson is the one that helps him.
Oh, cool.
You know, whenever he gets a chance. So him and Noah are really good friends, you know, so.
He's also the younger brother of Tanner Reif.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. His younger brother, Tanner Rife. And, you know, like I said, you know, Noah helps him whenever he can. You know, he gets some good coaching. And, you know, the cars he's driving, I know Matt's probably going to be listening. But, you know, they're not bad. You know, I mean, it's an older race team from way back in the day, that just kind of hung around and they've been doing their thing, but it's really neat, you know, all the hard work that they put in with Tyler, you know, to, you know, make him the driver he is, you know, the person that he is today. He's really neat. If you ever get a chance around the track, you know, stop by and say hi to him, really a fun, the Rice are really a fun family to be around, should be a pretty neat little interview, you know, hearing what
he had
to say, you know,
Tanner
about
on the show a couple of times as well.
Yeah.
Tanner,
yeah, we had Tanner when he won his, yeah,
yeah,
when he won his ARCA series races. So we had Tanner on the show, but this one's going to be neat because I'm kind of curious to hear. I haven't talked to him. Usually I've talked to him by now, but I'm really curious to hear how the last restart went with him and Landon Lewis, because him and Landon Lewis, they have a history of roughing each other up in the Legend series. So there's a little bit of bad blood between Tyler and Landon. I think on the track, I'm not so sure off the track, but it's going to be interesting to hear, you know. I want to hear what was going through his mind, you know, when they restarted next to each other. Then Landon shot out of the restart, shot out like a cannon. And I was waiting for the yellow flag. I thought Chris Wright would have thrown the yellow flag and yellow flag to start because of the jump that Landon got, but he didn't. And you know, of course, Tyler came back, went around him, raced him, and, you know, got the win. And, you know, like I said, it was a big win for Loudon and Jackson Racing.
Okay, well, a couple minutes early, but we're going to go ahead and bring him into the queue. Tyler is here, and we'll go ahead and get started with his interview. Tyler, welcome to our show. We're really happy to have you here tonight.
Thank you guys for having me.
Well, Tyler, congratulations on winning your first race in the ARCA Menards Series and ARCA West race out at Phoenix Raceway a couple weeks ago. It was a pretty exciting race. You started out with a wreck on lap 11, but you were able to recover from that.
Yeah, definitely unfortunate what happened, but luckily it wasn't too bad because Taylor Gray actually got like the same type of wreck last year and it destroyed his car. So I was pretty happy that it didn't do that.
Yeah, I guess so. But that wasn't the end of some good hard racing. You had some more hard racing as the laps were winding down. And I know Sal wants to talk to you about that, but just real briefly, I do want to get into your thoughts as you were coming to the finish line there, because you had to battle a couple of drivers, Erickson and Lewis, in order to get that win.
Yeah, I think that restart was definitely not the best, because I thought it was a restart zone. But he jumped it, and luckily my car was really fast, so we reeled them both back in before the last lap.
Okay, so your thoughts about coming to that finish line when you knew you had it?
I was like, I mean, I got it, like, coming out of four, we were cleared by a car length, and I, like, the excitement on the radio, everybody was, like, talking over each other, yelling, and it was, like, unreal. I was so happy.
High emotions, I would imagine.
Yeah, super.
Okay. Well, Tyler, I know your brother Tanner also races, but Sal was telling us that Noah's involved with your career as well. And I know Noah's a really busy guy, but talk about the support that you have behind you with your team there at Loudon Jackson Motorsports.
Noah's just like a really good buddy since we're kind of little kids. It's very like occasional help, but on the weekends where we do race with the bigger teams, he tends to help me out a little bit with the tracks that I haven't been to so far, so that's definitely nice.
Yeah, for sure. And then your brother Tanner, do you guys share race notes, or because you're racing for different teams, do you kind of keep that to yourself?
It's a little bit of both. Like, it's really good competition because we push each other, but we don't really like car notes, definitely not, but we do help each other as much as we can driver-wise.
Oh, okay. I know the Burton brothers, when they raced, and some of the other brothers, one of the rules is you don't wreck each other at the end, wreck each other. Do you guys kind of have that understanding?
No.
That's right.
That's enlightening. Okay, so we've got a lot to look forward to there. Now, joining us on tonight's show is our co-host for tonight, Sal Segala, and I know he's got some questions for you as well, Tyler.
First of all, Tyler, congratulations on the win. I know it was a big win, not only for you, for your family, but, you know, for Loudon Jackson, you know, with the team, you know, just getting together. You know, you only had a couple races with them last year, you know, to close out the season, you know, and the way it started out was pretty neat, you know, the way, you know, Matt and Tony and Chris brought you in the fold, but, you know, you'd already had a history with Matt and Tony, you know, when you're racing with the Southwest Tour Series.
Yeah. I've been with Tony, mostly Tony, since I was probably like literally 9 years old. Starting in the junior late models in Madera Speedway. Actually, since I was 8, because he was helping my brother when I was in mini cup still. So it's been super long with Tony, and then Matt started spotting me in the SRL. So it's been a couple years with Matt, so the relationship between us three is definitely really good.
So what was it that made you decide to go with the Loudon Jackson team instead of, you know, maybe being Tanner's teammate at McAnally Racing, or maybe even going to High Point, you know, be Trevor Huddleston's teammate, or even, you know, going with Jerry Pitts, who's also, you know, one of the, you know, who's also from the Vegas area.
The main reason why I went with his team was because of, like, it was more of a family-run new organization, just how my tour team was ran, and I really like that. I like how it's, like, underdogs, smaller people, and then when the good finishes come, it's way more impressive, way more exciting, I guess, where you could be on a team like my brother and have you go out there and you don't run in the top five and then you get bagged on, I guess, because you're in a NAPA car, right? So I think I just went with like a family team because I'm super tight with everyone. Chris is super cool and everyone here is just super nice and loving.
So what's it like to run with the Jacksons, you know, with the team that's been around for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years? I don't know, maybe even 60 years. I mean, they're probably even around before NASCAR even started, it seems like, because, you know, the Jackson name goes all the way back to, gosh, I mean, I think even before I was born, it seems like.
Yeah, it's definitely cool with all the experience, like, coming into late models, it helped a lot because I didn't know. I mean, I raced quarter midgets where it's just a circle track and you full throttle it the whole time. So I'd drive it in super deep in the corner and then like, whoa, you can't do that. That's not right. So it definitely helps a lot with like an experienced team. And I haven't really worked with much other people but them because I started my first late model race was with the Jacksons and I've never done another one without them.
So then we fast forward to the ARCA series, you know. like I said, last year, you know, Tanner ran with Brucati last year. You know, then, you know, you stayed with your you know, with your Southwest tour then this year, you know, you jumped on board with the Loudon Jackson team. You know, you guys got a good start on the season with that win at Phoenix, you know, a tough track. You know, a lot of good drivers out there. You know, you had a lot of East drivers out there. You know, you had a lot of, a lot of experience out there. You know, when you look at, Solich, you know, you look at, Jack Wood, Jesse Love, who's been a champion, you know what, and he's got a lot of races under his belt too.
Yeah, I love racing the Phoenix races because it's always so much competition, and when you get behind a fast car, because I mean that's my only ever mile track that I've ran. I'm going to run a couple more this year, but getting behind someone that knows how to run a mile track is definitely a lot. And like Noah helped with that, like me not knowing how the air works, he's helped me with passing cars, like where to be, where not to be, because how the air hits your spoiler. So it's cool being with experienced people that have raced ARCA for a couple of years. It definitely helps.
So how's all this going to play into when I talked to Matt, and he said that you're going to be racing both the East and the West Series?
Yeah, so actually, this weekend, Friday, we fly out to Pensacola, Florida for the first East race, and I'll be going there as points leader, so hopefully it goes pretty good.
That's awesome. You know what? I see a lot of good things. You know, I've known you, for a few years now. You know, I've watched you and your brother, race come up. You know what? And it's been neat to, to kind of be around there, and see the the progression. You know, and it's neat. In Vegas, when Noah went over there, and helped you out last year. Then of course I know this year again he was with you. Last year in Vegas, this year in Phoenix, I'm sure he's going to be with you a lot more. But without Noah, of course, you have to rely on your own team and Tony and Dave.
Yeah, I feel like Noah's almost like he doesn't really that's the first race he's ever actually helped me, and it wasn't that much. The only thing we did was a track walk earlier in the day, because the restart box changed a little bit. We were checking out track conditions, where the rubber was, and that's probably the only help he's had for me. He definitely has helped me in my legends a little bit in my late models, but it's just mostly just a tight friendship. So I've always really been like reliant on the Jacksons and the team for help.
That's the, like I said, the Jacksons, they're really good solid team, and they got good help there, with Chris. I don't know if Chris has been out there. I know last year Chris Jackson was helping you guys a lot, but like I said, with Tony and Dave and Matt's been around for a long time, and to see the improvements, that you've done, through the legends, you get in a legend car, you're really super aggressive driver, the legend, you're aggressive, in your ARCA, you're aggressive in your pro lane. That's probably why, you're having the success that you have.
Yeah, I tend to be on the aggressive side, but I've definitely tried to tame it out a little bit in the new series because of people being problems, and as part of the season, you definitely don't want problems with any of the drivers. So I try to stay as clean as I can. And surprisingly, I went from two laps down to the lead without moving anybody out of the way.
He's always been a really clean driver. And with that, Tyler, I just want to wish you the best of luck the rest of the season. We'll see you at Erindale. Best luck the rest of the season. Congratulations on your win. And I'm going to turn it over to Sharon because I know she has some questions she wants to ask you.
Okay, thank you, Sal.
Okay, Tyler, I want to talk about, for those of us that don't know you, this is kind of a chance for us to get to know Tyler Reif. Are we pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I just want to make sure. Because I know at ARCA they said we should pronounce it as Reif. So Sal corrected me right away and said it was Reif. Okay. Was your dad in racing? I know your brother was in racing. Do you come from a racing family, or are you the first-generation racers?
So my grandpa actually raced a lot of sprint cars. He was a really good sprint car driver, but never any pavement. And then my dad was always into cars, liked racing. And then me and my brother actually started out racing in my grandpa's parking lot of his business in quarter midgets. I watched my brother do it, and I was like, dang, that's really what I want to do. And then before I was old enough to race, I would practice in my grandpa's parking lot.
That is so cool. I bet you've got some cool photos of that as well. what about as far as the tracks? I know you raced a little bit last season. What were the tracks you raced on last season?
Last year I did mostly SRL. So I did a lot of California. So I raced a lot of Irwindale, Curran. I did some North Cal stuff like Stockton and Roseville. And then I actually did two ARCA starts last year, which was my hometown of Vegas and then Phoenix. And then a lot of legends in Colorado, here, Arizona, California.
Okay, so looking at the schedule, knowing that you're racing both east and west, what tracks are you kind of looking forward to most?
I'm really excited for this weekend, actually, Five Flags, the next Phoenix, Bristol, and actually kind of all the East Coast tracks because I've never been there. And then for the West, Phoenix and my home track.
Las Vegas Bullring. Okay, so that's pretty cool. Tyler, we've really enjoyed talking with you here tonight. Again, congratulations on your Truck Series victory. Before you go, I want to make sure there's a lot of people that work with you behind the scenes, and I know you're a smaller team, so it's not as many as maybe some of the other teams, but who do you want to give a shout-out to before you say goodnight tonight?
Chris Bottom for everything he's done, and then the whole Jackson family. My teammate RJ for working on my cars and being a good supporter, and then everybody on this team that helped out so much.
Okay, that's awesome. And then, two, are you on social media so we can follow you on social media and keep up with what's going on?
I am.
Okay, give us your handles.
My Instagram is Tyler_Rice_41, and my Facebook's the same.
Okay. That is good to know. I think I might have tagged the wrong person on my promo tonight. I tagged somebody, Tyler Wright 7.
I just changed it, so it's probably because my number was 7 up until this year.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay, so I'll make sure to use the number 41 the next time. We hope this isn't the last time you visit with us and that you'll be able to come back and visit with us again. Hopefully this won't be your only win. I think you might have some other wins down the road here.
Yeah, that's definitely the goal. I think you've got a good shot this weekend, too.
Okay, good to know, Tyler. Again, it was really good getting to know you, and we'll look forward to chatting with you when the next time rolls around, okay?
Okay, thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, it was
a pleasure. All
right, thanks, Tyler. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Tyler Rice here on Fan for Racing Radio tonight gave us a really nice interview, and he almost sounds like a seasoned guy, Sal.
Oh, he is. I'm telling you, Cher, you go to the track, man, this guy is funny. He's awesome, I'm telling you, man. He's great.
Now,
I mean, they go out there. They like to have
pictures.
A good time.
Yes, I've seen some pictures of him, and he kind of reminds me of a younger Noah Gregson. Is that weird?
Yeah. You know what? I don't know. I've known Noah a long time, and Noah really wasn't the way Tyler is right now. When Noah was growing up, Noah was a lot more quieter. Noah got more the way Noah is after he trucks and got more into racing. But when Noah first started, Noah really wasn't. Tyler is man, I'm telling you, man, him and his brother, they are crack up to be around. Great family. I mean, really good people. They joke around. They're really neat. I mean, you know what? They're really, really awesome family. Really blessed to
well,
know, you know what, and call them friends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing Tanner and Tyler to the radio show. We really do appreciate it, and we hope we get another chance to talk with them. We are going to move on here to the Cup Series race that took place out at Atlanta Motor Speedway, the Raptor King of Tough 250. Oops, I'm on the wrong page here. It was the Ambetter 400. I'm on the Xfinity. Okay, let me bring up the correct race notes here, and we'll talk about this. The Ambetter Health 400 with race winner Joey Logano at the age of 32 driving the Team Penske number 22 Auto Trader Ford for Roger Penske, the team owner, and crew chief Paul Wolf. It was his 32nd victory in 512 Cup Series starts, his first victory and third top 10 finish this season. This is his first victory and seventh top 10 finish in 19 races at Atlanta Motor Speedway. Brad Keselowski posted a second-place finish, his 10th top 10 finish in 17 races at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and his second top 10 finish in the 2023 season. Christopher Bell posted his second top 10 finish in 6 races at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and Ty Gibbs was the highest-finishing rookie of this race. It was a pretty dominant day for Joey Logano and his Ford machine. He definitely maneuvered his number 22 Ford through the final two laps of Sunday's Ambetter Health 400, finishing the race where he started from the front of the field. He got a push from Christopher Bell on the backstretch on the last lap, and Logano moved to the outside of leader Brad Keselowski with a huge momentum, charging past Keselowski's number 6 Ford into the lead. Keselowski finished second, followed by the Christopher Bell, Corey LaJoy, Tyler Reddick, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, Eric Jones, Ty Gibbs, and Kyle Busch round out the top 10. Again, Logano started from the pole. He dominated much of the race, winning the first stage and leading 140 laps on the day. However, he had to make a late charge, moving from third on the last lap, getting around Keselowski again for that win. Stage 1, again, was won by Logano. Stage 2 was won by Austin Cindric. There were 20 lead changes among 13 drivers and 5 cautions for 34 yellow flag laps. The average speed of this race was 138.8 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 drivers in this race, Sal?
You know, it's funny because I was talking to it doesn't matter now. We're going to the race results. But Ryan Blaney at the Clash, and we were saying amongst some of the media guys around here, we were talking about who's going to be the GOAT for Penske this year, and we all chose Ryan Blaney, and as we're looking, you know what, you know, Joey Logano, he'll always be the franchise driver for Penske, but you know, just
yeah,
to kind of give Ryan Blaney a little bit of help. But you know what, Joey continues to prove, you know, and I remember years ago when Joey was first coming up, man, people just hated Joey, and those people still hate on Joey. You know what, and I'm a
big
fan of Joey.
Joey's a different person when he gets behind the wheel than he is. Most of the time you see him with a big smile on his face when he's outside of the car. But when he gets inside that car, he becomes a tiger with a growl.
Oh, yeah, and he's good with the fans. I mean, he's awesome with the fans.
Yeah,
you know,
he
always makes time for the fans. You know, but, you know, to see him get that win, you know, I really wanted Brad so bad. You know, I think Brad is trying to play the driver role more than the owner role this year. I think last year, you know, coming into you know, taking, you know, coming into the ownership role, I think, you know, he wasn't as focused as he is, because now it seems like Brad's a lot more focused, you know, on the, you know, on driving, even though at the Clash when they interviewed him, he, you know, they interviewed him in his owner role. But then, of course, you know, he took over the driver role. But I really wanted Brad to win. I mean, I actually thought Brad was going to win Daytona, too. And then, of course, you know, you got Chris Bell, you know, who's really stepping it up, you know, with JGR since Kyle Busch left. You know, it's really neat to see, you know, Chris Bell, you know, catch that third spot. And then, you know, Ty Gibbs is coming into his own, you know, finishing ninth, you know. Got that, you know, a top 10 finish.
What about Corey LaJoy?
Corey LaJoy too, you know, up there, you know, in the, you know, getting that fourth spot. But you know what? That 12th to see Noah Gregson finish 12th, that was huge. The top 15
was huge for
Noah Gregson,
absolutely. Did you see the video of Eric Jones moving up through the field?
No, I didn't. But you know what?
I was
reading an interview
today. It's amazing.
I was reading an interview on Legacy Motorsports, you know what, and you know, just the, you know, the issues that they're having, you know what, and you know, and Noah's, you know, expectations, you know, this year, you know, were just, you know, they changed from, you know, him last, you know, being the, you know, the guy that's going to win all the races, going to win the championship, you know, he's going to be the aggressor and all this, and now he's in the Cup, you know what, and he's more taking on a more quieter role. You know what, just try to learn the car. But, I mean, you know, they hadn't had a good finish, you know. Yeah, they hadn't had a good finish, you know, and it was good to see, you know, to get that top 15. You know, of course, Ty Gibbs, you know, doing better in ninth, you know, than, you know, Eric Jones getting the, you know, the other top spot. But, yeah, like you said, Corey LaJoy is just, man, you know. But then it's a super speedway technically. So, you know, you kind of, you know, that kind of comes into play a little bit, you know, the super speedway thing.
A little bit.
That's why I said, I really didn't say a whole lot on it, but.
All right. It's a little bit different than the other super speedways, but I get your point. The margin of victory was 0.193 seconds, and again, there were some accidents in this race, some drivers out on the DVP. B.J. McLeod was out on lap 189 for an accident, as well as Chris Buescher, same accident. Harrison Burton said he came back out on the track. He didn't realize that they had the time had elapsed on the damaged vehicle policy, and he came back out on the track, and NASCAR called him back in. Kevin Harvick was out on lap 190 because of an accident, as was William Byron. On lap 208, it was Eric Almirola and Kyle Larson out because of an accident. On lap 213, Daniel Suarez was out because of the damaged vehicle policy, but there were 23 cars this time completing all the laps. Those drivers finishing laps down were Chase Briscoe, Cody Ware, J.J. Yaley, Bubba Wallace, and Ryan Preece all finished the race, but they did finish laps down. This was a much better race, I thought. Then we were a little bit afraid after watching the trucks in the Xfinity Series race. Only five cautions in this race compared to the big cautions in the other two events.
Yeah. So yeah, it was. You know, there's some good finishes there. You know, some. You know, I mean, you know, William Byron, he wants to get all that bad mojo out, you know, got those two wins, and now it's time to get the mojo out, the bad mojo,
yep.
You know, before the end of the season comes around.
Exactly. Let's go ahead and cover the points report, Sal.
The points report is, of course, because of the penalties last week, you know, don't expect to hear your normal drivers. Yeah, it got shook up by a lot, so none of your Hendrick drivers are up in the are nowhere near the top until to see what happens with the appeals. If the appeals hold, Or if they get overturned, then they'll get their spots back. But if not, they're going to stay at the bottom, you know, where they're at. But so for right now, we got Joey Logano leading the points. Christopher Bell sitting solidly in second place. And Watermelon Man, Ross Chastain in third. Ryan Blaney in fourth. And Brad Keselowski sitting fifth. Kevin Harvick still holding on in the top ten with the sixth spot. Kyle Busch in seventh with the one win he had at California at Auto Club Speedway. And Martin Truex ran off the top eight. And then from there, then we go to the next eight, which is Denny Hamlin, Daniel Suarez, who's got a ton of confidence this season, even in his interview. You know, he's got he's just looking forward, to making the chase and making a good run for the championship. And then 11th is Austin Cedric. 12th is our Daytona 500 winner, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. 13th is Chris Buescher. 14th is Corey LaHoy. 15th is Tyler Reddick. And in the 16th spot is Bubba Wallace with right below him, 10 points away, is A.J. Allmendinger.
Okay. yes, the points between first and eighth, the halfway mark there is 32 points separating the top eight drivers. And here we've got five races just like the Xfinity Series, and this will continue to sort itself out, and as you point out, a lot can happen after the appeal process here for Hendrick Motorsports, Denny Hamlin as well, and Colic Racing. So we'll wait to hear what's going to happen there, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it on Hot Topics here shortly. So, Sal, are you still staying at home, or are you going to be at a racetrack this week?
Well, no, I'll be out at Kern with the Spears SRL Southwest Tour.
Okay, awesome. And any traveling this year for the National Series in SRL?
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking around at some of the races. I talked to Derek this past weekend. He's doing the driver developmental thing with Jake Bowman, John Moore in the SRL Southwest Tour, and also Jacob Gomes, who was last year's champion. So, I'm going to see what races he's going to run. I know he's going to run Tuesday night in New Hampshire, which I'm not going to make that because it's during the week, which will be the week of the All-Star race. So he'll be racing that Tuesday. But he's got a couple other races coming up. I'll probably catch the All-American 400 again at Nashville Fairgrounds.
Oh, Nashville.
No, in Nashville. Okay. Yeah, I'll probably catch that one again this year. And then, of course, the Derby at the end of the season. And, we'll talk and, see which other ones I can get out to. And hopefully catch a few ARCA East races with Tyler Reif.
Yeah, that would be very cool if you're able to do that. Sal, we always appreciate you being on the show, and I hope things are progressing well for you.
Yeah, they're getting there. I mean, it's always a battle, especially of, my age. I still think I'm 30 years old, that I can just, recover in one or two days, and I'm fighting it different. It's taking a ton longer now, and I'm like frustrated.
I understand the frustration.
I'm thinking, I went and ran around Saturday, at Irwindale, but, I did have to stop a couple more times, to catch my breath than what I normally do. So, I'm just going to continue, my progression, continue, to start exercising more, because I got, I got some big races coming up, I don't want to end up in a hospital, away from home.
Exactly. Okay, well, thanks again for being here. We really appreciate it. Enjoyed the interview with Tyler Reif, and can't wait to see him race some more throughout the season. Sal, We wish you the best, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next Monday night here at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Fan for Racing Radio.
All right, thanks, and everybody have a good evening, have a good weekend, and stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks, Al.
Okay.
All
okay,
right, it is good night, Sal. We are at the top of the hour, and that means it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off with our Fan for Racing crew. Only one crew member is here so far, and I believe that is Michael Lorizel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, oh, it sure is. I guess everyone else is slacking. One of these days, we'll get Jay on the line here, and you know he'll grace us with his presence.
Yep, it'll be coming. Okay, but right now to grace us with his presence is Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hey, what's going on? How you guys doing?
We're doing just great. How are you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Happy to be on tonight.
Okay, well, we're always happy to have you. And also joining us and gracing us with his presence is Jay Houston. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I didn't get to catch as much as the lead-in here tonight. I was actually on the phone, got some more input for one of our hot, hot topics tonight. So pumped to be here. A lot to talk about.
Well, Jay, I don't usually give you a chance to start first, but tonight we're going to go to Jay, Andy, and then Mike. So you get to pick the hot topic here first.
Well, I appreciate that so much because I wanted to kind of go last on this, so I was hoping I was the one that got to bring it up. Xfinity Series driver Josh Williams parking his car on the start-finish line and walking off and leaving his car in the middle of a race.
Okay. Andy, you get first crack at that one. Your thoughts?
yeah, Mike and I were talking about this as it happened in the race on Saturday and found it to be pretty entertaining, to say the least. But this was a race, before we get to the Josh Williams incident, this was a race that was highly populated by poor officiating, just really extensive cautions, indecisiveness. Just really wasting a lot of time under yellow. And, you know, I know I don't direct a race series, but I certainly can spot good officiating versus bad officiating. I'll use an example of David Hoots, who was very good at officiating the Cup Series for many years, was efficient and got the job done. For whatever reason, there's people that work within NASCAR that still have a lot of learning to do. So anyways, as it pertains to this race, the Xfinity Series race, I have to think maybe there was some frustration, you know, from the sanctioning body on the way the race was being conducted by officiating, because a lot of time was being spent under yellow. So poor Josh Williams, who has damage to his right front, you know, has to come in and work on fixing the car. The team puts bare bonds on the right front to try to secure that fender, and unfortunately that tape blew off. And NASCAR at that point says, all right, you extended the caution, you're done for the day. And which I thought was completely out of line and completely ridiculous, and so did the team, obviously, because the spotter told Josh, you're done for the day, you were supposedly the cause of extending a caution period. So you're done for the day. And obviously Josh was upset and mad about it, and I don't blame him, you know, at all. So, you know, he said, all right, fine, you want me to park the car, I'm going to park it on the start-finish line. And he walked away. And I think at that moment he won the support of, I would say, just about any race fan out there, and certainly me. I was a huge fan of what he did because, you know, I thought that the way that his team was treated was insanely unfair. I mean, and I said this to Mike on Saturday, if that was Chase Elliott of Hendrick Motorsports, I guarantee they wouldn't park him for a piece of bear bond coming off his car. So I thought it was really poor treatment of Josh and his team, and you know what? Fine, I'll park my car on the start-finish line. So I don't blame Josh for what he did. I know there will probably be repercussions from that we're going to talk about Thursday night, but I don't blame the frustration. I don't blame the way that he handled it. You know, if you're going to get treated poorly like that, then you than the sanctioning body deserved the response they got. So kudos to Josh and that team. And if anything, it garnered some publicity. You know, I think a lot of people probably didn't even know who Josh Williams was before Saturday, and now they do, and that's team and sponsorship exposure. And you know what? Maybe that's marketing 101 at its finest right there. So kudos to Josh for what he did. 100% agree with it. And I think that, you know, certainly if you're going to get treated like that, then you need to expect a response like that.
All right, Mike.
Well, first off, I'll start with some clarification via Bob Pockers. Bob did post an excerpt from the rule book that basically clarified that this was completely within NASCAR's scope of what they could do. The rule book does allow, at NASCAR's discretion, them to park a car for extending a caution period. However, like Andy said, the precedent is that they almost never exercise that option. Remember, the 92 team had repaired the car. They did not exceed the damaged vehicle policy. I'm not sure exactly how much time they had left on the clock, but they did not run out the clock there. They were waiting to go green in order to try and make minimum speed to clear the clock, and we would assume to make further repairs on the car. But because some of the Barabond came off of the car and it caused a debris caution immediately following a caution period that took over 20 minutes for the track crew to clean up and get the track back ready to race again, NASCAR decided they were going to park the 92, even though the 92 could have potentially continued in the race there, assuming that they had made minimum speed. And I agree with Andy. I think that this was arbitrary, and I think it was NASCAR taking out some frustration on the unfortunate victim who just happened to be Josh Williams and the number 92 team. I don't think it was fair. I think it was excessive. I think they should have given him a fair opportunity to repair the car like they do with pretty much every other competitor who has a damaged car. This is not the first time that we've seen parts come off of a car because the repair that was done on pit road wasn't sufficient. It happens. It's unfortunate. Teams don't do it intentionally, but it happens, especially when it's 45 degrees out and the adhesive material on that Barabond doesn't stick very well when it's that cold. It's not out of the realm of possibilities that a big chunk of tape like that might not stay stuck on the car. And in this case, it didn't. It's part of racing. The unfortunate thing here is it's kind of a bad look on everyone all around. Yes, Josh Williams kind of, he didn't actually show the social finger to anybody, but by what he did with the car, it was kind of showing the finger to NASCAR and the officiating decision to park the number 92 for the race. I agree with the decision in so much that he was absolutely right to be frustrated. I think there was no reason to park that car, and like Andy said, I can almost guarantee they would not park Chase Elliott, Joey Logano, any of the other major names in the sport, or even in the Xfinity Series. They probably wouldn't have parked a Junior Motorsports or a Joe Gibbs Racing car. But because it was a Mario Gosselin car and most likely would not have been competitive for the win, they felt that they were going to be able to park him and get away with it. That's not fair to the team. It's not fair to the driver, the sponsors, all the people who worked so hard to put that car on the track. Even if that car is not competitive to win the race, they put the effort forth to put the car together, show up at the racetrack, make the show, and go out there and try and race and do the very best that they can. And it wasn't fair to them to not get the opportunity that so many other teams get afforded to repair the car. And even if things don't go well with that repair, they get the opportunity to either run out the damaged vehicle clock and then have to park the car, or at least run through their options. They did not get to use all their options at this point because NASCAR decided to park that car. So, yes, Josh Williams is most likely going to get a penalty here. Funny enough, before the race was even over, Denny Hamlin tweeted and said he would pay Josh Williams his fine. We don't know what that fine is or even if he's going to be fined at this point or what penalty he might get. But apparently Denny Hamlin has a checkbook out ready to write the check for him because I guess the fans weren't the only ones who were supportive of that move.
Okay. Yeah, I know when Josh Williams did that, he gained a lot of new fans. I have a little bit different take on it because, and this is where I'm coming from. I agree with a lot of what you guys have said, both Andy and Mike. However, one thing that I think we need to kind of keep in mind is there was a changing of the guard, if you will, as it relates to the competition director. And with that, I would imagine, comes some personnel changes as well. And I suspect that these guys are going through a huge learning curve. And it had this particular race, it just wasn't pretty. They did make some mistakes, and I think that we're going to see, well, I hope we don't see this kind of thing happen again. The big thing is what they're going to learn from the mistakes that they're making so that they don't keep repeating those mistakes. But, yeah, these guys, it seems like a lot of people are not prepared for what was happening on the track. And as a result, these cautions are taking a lot longer than they should have been taking. The truck race was a little bit of a mess, too. I know that one thing that was happening with them is that they were racing on a green track with all the rain that took place on Friday. They didn't get their practice in. They didn't get their qualifying in. And they ended up racing on a real green track. So I think that played into a lot of that, too. I know they broke the record for cautions in the truck series. They broke the record for cautions in the Xfinity series as well. Relating to Josh Berry unfortunately got caught up in some of that. I think you're right. They might not have called that. Well, they would have had to call the caution for any kind of debris on the track. That would have happened no matter who it is. They would have had to call the caution. would they have, would there be a penalty for Josh Williams had he not gotten out of his car? Probably not. But he did get out of his car. And it's been told to these guys a lot of times, you're not supposed to get out of your car. At the racetrack, you're supposed to wait for the safety personnel to come and pick you up and bring you into the infield. He was told to park his car to come into the garage. And again, I understand his frustration. It's understandable that he's frustrated. And I know what he did was highly popular with the fans, but he did violate safety precautions by getting out of his car. So I do think that NASCAR would be justified in issuing a penalty if it comes. And if Denny Hamlin wants to pay it, that's fine. But I understand where you guys are coming from. I do. I get it. But I do think that he had no business getting out of his car either. So I do think that a penalty would be in line here. Excuse me, and I don't think there's any driver who's gotten out of the car in a situation like that has received a penalty. So I think that that's understandable. But I do think that I'm not excusing it, because for a professional series, these guys should know what they're doing. And it's become painfully clear that there's people who don't seem to really know what they're doing. And I'll bring up another issue later where it seems like the wrong call was made as far as the lineup. But I do think that there might be a learning curve here that we might have to be, I don't want to say patient with, but maybe understanding of is maybe more of the word I'm looking for here. Because these guys really should know what they're doing if they're going to be doing this, or they need to get people in there that do know what they're doing to help these guys as they go through that learning curve. But, Jay, I'm really, really curious as to what your thoughts are.
Well, between the three of you, took 15 minutes, and I was trying to even separate my thoughts here between two parts of this. I'll start with the rule itself. The rule is there. NASCAR enforced it. To me, the argument's over. Whether you feel they would penalize a top team, whatever, doesn't matter. The rule is there. They were given the opportunity, and that this has been in play for several years now, of you got one opportunity, whether it be 5 minutes, 7 minutes, whatever, to fix your car and get it runnable at minimum speed without parts and pieces flying off, which is something fans and officials and drivers asked for. They wanted that. They were tired of having these debris cautions because cars were out there running in their way, losing parts, not maintaining speed. So this was asked for, and now they have it and aren't happy with it. The aspect of whether or not it would have happened to a top-tier team, I kind of disagree with that because, to me, if NASCAR wants to make a point, and I feel like they'd do more to try and help these underfunded teams because there are only a select number of top teams and they want to have a competitive series, they actually do more to try and help these smaller teams, in my opinion. So, and I think if they're going to enforce a rule to, I think it was Mike that said it, of do it to a lower tier team and get away with it because they'll just park and go on their way, doesn't even send the message because everybody's like, oh, they wouldn't do it to a top team, so we can go ahead and get away with it. If NASCAR was really trying to make a point, hey, we're going to enforce this rule no matter who it is, it would have to be to a top-tier team. Nobody pays attention until it is a top-tier team. So I don't think that's the case. Now, with that, was it a necessary call? If it was just the tape, and I listened to this on the radio and watched the broadcast when I got home. Actually, I think I watched the Xfinity one this morning. I don't know if it was actually just the tape or the fender that went with it. Just the tape, I understand you could give some leeway being that it was cold and the tape wasn't sticking. However, we saw other teams prepared, heating that tape up before they put it on, making sure it was secure. So there again, you got teams that are handling the same problem. You need to step up your game. And I'll wait now to address the possible penalty on the second go-round.
Okay, Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, I just, you know, with regards to Josh probably getting a penalty, yeah, I mean, it's deserved, obviously. He's, you know, exiting a vehicle on an active racetrack and then walking to the grass. I mean, we have safety rules in place that are supposed to deter that. So he'll get something this week, and I'm not going to say he doesn't deserve it. I mean, what he did was, you know, certainly against the rules. So I don't disagree with that. So whatever he gets will be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets parked for a week or two. I don't even know what the repercussions are from something like that. But, you know, to say that his penalty was warranted, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we've seen tape blow off cars or fenders or rear bumper covers and nothing happens. So, you know, if whether it's in the rule book or not, which apparently it is, so I'm not going to dispute that. So let's say that the rule's in the rule book and NASCAR enforced it. That's fine. NASCAR needs to be more consistent if they're going to be really serious about this, because I can't tell you how many times recently we've seen stuff fly off cars and nothing gets done about it. So if they, you know, they enforce the rule this time around, that's totally fine. I have no issue with that since it is in the rule book. But be consistent, because inconsistency is something that drives me absolutely insane, which is NASCAR these days. So it is what it is.
Okay, Mike?
Well, Jay brought up the point about having the one opportunity to fix the car and that's all you get. Well, yes and no. That's what the damaged vehicle policy clock is for. The 92 team did not run out of time. I'm not sure how much time they had left on the clock, whether they had enough left where they could have come back down pit road or not, but that's kind of irrelevant. They still had or should have the opportunity to make minimum speed with or without the tape. Is the car going to run faster with the tape on it? Probably. It'll be a little bit more aerodynamic. But if they don't have the time to try and repair the car because of the DVP clock, they still have the opportunity, if they make minimum speed, to go back and do more repairs on the car. Because NASCAR parked them, they lost the opportunity to even attempt to make minimum speed, to clear the clock, to repair the car, to be able to potentially continue in the race. Still, like Andy said, it's within NASCAR's purview per the rule book to do it. They just don't tend to do it most of the time, because we do see it fairly commonly where parts and pieces do come off of these cars, even still being worked on within the boundaries of the existing damaged vehicle policy. So this is kind of a rare penalty that we see enforced here. Even though it's part of the rule book, it's a NASCAR's discretion kind of thing, and NASCAR tends to err on the side of not parking cars, except in this case where they did. That's kind of the contention there. With regard to the actions of Josh Williams, black and white, yes, he broke several rules, exiting the vehicle and whatnot. He's probably going to catch a penalty for actions detrimental to stock car racing or something along those lines. But what's really going to not work well for him, the one thing NASCAR hates more than anything else is being made to look bad. And even though Josh Williams was in the wrong from a rules and even a sportsmanship standpoint, I think from a public relations standpoint, Josh Williams won that battle regardless of what the penalty comes down on. And NASCAR kind of ended up looking like the loser with a little bit of egg on their face there. And I think that's probably going to bode poorly for Josh Williams when the penalty decision comes in probably tomorrow, if not Wednesday.
Yeah, I agree with you guys that they should be consistent in enforcing the rules. Again, I think these guys are going through some kind of learning curve or something. I don't know. But I know last year I remember seeing Chase Elliott, the most popular driver on the track, with a bunch of stuff hanging from his car and falling off of it, and they did not call him in. I do think that they need to be more consistent with the way that they're calling these calls. But the fact remains, he was on the track. He did lose parts and pieces from his car, and they are forced to call it caution when there's debris on the track. There's no doubt about that. If there's debris on the track, they have to call the caution. Now, if they called him back in because he lost that debris and he chose not to come in, that's not on NASCAR either. He made a decision not to come in when he's being called in, or he made a decision to park it on the start-finish line instead of bringing the car in. So, again, that's his decision. That's not NASCAR making that happen. That's him. So he lost his opportunity. I don't know if they were calling him in to park him or if they were calling him in to get the repairs taken care of in the garage.
He was parked. The call from NASCAR was the 92 is parked. He's done for the day. So, no, he was not being called to make more repairs to the car. He was done.
Oh, okay. Well, then there was probably a reason for that. What that is, I'm not sure. But I do think that NASCAR needs to be more consistent with their calls on those situations on the racetrack. Now, part of that might be, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, might be because he is a lower-funded team. Maybe they were trying to save him some money versus spending more money and getting nowhere. I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate there. But just a thought to think about. But, Jay, what's your follow-up?
Well, I'll touch a little bit more on that call itself before I go into the possible penalties and whatnot. The fact that it came off immediately upon following a repair. I think a lot of examples that have been given have been after they've gone back to race conditions. They are off the damage repair clock, and they're back under race conditions, back to beating and bagging, rubbing the wall. And so thus there was more damage that created or caused came from the previous one. This was your immediate repair did not work. And I feel that's why NASCAR made the call. With us now to regard Josh Williams and what he did, here's where my problem comes in. My problem comes with the inconsistency of fans and people that are supporting Josh Williams. I appreciate their support to him. However, when Kyle Busch parked his car and walked away, he was called a baby, having a temper tantrum, thinking he's bigger than the sport and all that, and people bashed on him for it. But they want to support Josh Williams. The action was the same. We've talked about announcers. We've talked about broadcasters. Be a professional. Don't let the outside world get into your head. Act like you've been there before. He did not, and I like him. I've always rooted for him. I wanted to see him get into the playoffs last year. But this was a case of what he did wasn't appropriate. And I don't like the fact that it's based on who they are versus what they did. Why is it Kyle Busch does it and he's called a baby throwing a temper tantrum and Josh Williams gets a standing ovation? That's where my frustration comes in. It is the inconsistency from fans. I understand NASCAR maybe should have, like I said, there could have been the exception made. It was extremely cold there in Atlanta. The tape obviously was not working just as is. But there again, everybody was in that same boat. Other teams made it work. And I think of the movie Days of Thunder, his crew chief tells him, hey, Darrell Waltrip's out there running with his tires. You got to make your tires work. Y'all got the same situation. Most of the teams made it work.
Did you want to talk about the penalty?
Well, I do think that a penalty's coming in. Yes, thank you, Sharon. I was on the phone there before calling in with Amanda and Raymond McAlpin from Jackson Motor Speedway. Yeah, if that were the case, as a track owner, promoter, you're put in a position where you have to penalize them, kind of like we talked about with Denny Hamlin. You're putting them in a box. They have to respond. If I recall correctly, going back to Kyle Busch's situation, it is going to be a monetary fine. However, that was off in the garage, not out on the track where it caused an even more extensive delay and not quite as big of the, say, middle finger to NASCAR itself for doing so. So I possibly see a suspension coming. Raymond and Amanda said that they probably would for a week tell them not to come back. So that is a possibility, but based on precedence there, if I recall correctly from Kyle Busch's situation, it will be a monetary fine. And obviously they had a talk with him already immediately after. He wasn't even allowed to do media interviews. He went directly to jail. Don't pass go. Go directly to the NASCAR hauler.
Yeah. Okay, Andy, you get to bring up our next hot topic here.
Well, on the subject of penalties, Denny Hamlin has now decided to appeal his penalty from last week. Thoughts?
Okay, Mike?
I didn't listen to the podcast where he discussed it. Apparently, there was some disagreement between him and JGR. He initially wanted to appeal it. JGR said, no, we're not appealing it. And then some circumstances changed. I'm not sure exactly what the details are. I think it had to do with the official penalty notice from NASCAR. They went line by line on it. And Denny believes that what he was penalized for does not line up with what was listed on the actual penalty report. I'm not sure, like I said, this. I didn't listen to his podcast where he supposedly went through it and gave his specific reasons for the appeal. With all that said, good luck. I don't think he's going to be successful in this one. I feel like it's pretty cut and dry, and if for no other reason, then he's the guy who admitted he did it in the first place. So he's got to work against his own words to try and appeal this penalty. I really doubt that the appeal is going to go anywhere, and I certainly hope that it doesn't. In fact, I hope they – because the appeal board can strengthen the penalty as well. An appeal of a penalty reopens the book. So they can decide that the penalty did not meet what the rule book sets forth as far as what the penalty should be in that circumstance. It is within the boundaries of what NASCAR sets forth for an L3 penalty like that. So it could most likely be your penalty is upheld and there's no further changes. I'm expecting that's going to be the result of this, but I am interested to see what the case on this one is because, at least from my standpoint, my non-lawyerly, just watching racing on TV standpoint, it sounds like Denny Hamlin pretty much shut the book on himself when he flat out admitted that that's what he did.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and step in here. We do an announcement at this time of the night for our show because we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, and that means you're going to hear us go off the air while we're still talking. Just know, especially for our first-time listeners, that we are going to record that part of the conversation, and it will be available on our podcast as bonus overtime material. So I'll go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know when the podcast is available. And once that gets processed, then you'll be able to fast forward to that two-hour mark and hear the rest of the conversation. Again, don't want anybody to be caught off guard and not know what to do or how to hear the rest of the conversation. So we make this announcement at this time. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, this one, it really throws me, and it seems like based on the not just, I'd say, fan support that I know, Sharon, you mentioned, it seems like some, a lot of fans were supporting Denny Hamlin, but also some within the industry, whether it be reporters, broadcasters. I didn't hear about the whole deal between him and the team owner, JGR, but I think he kind of garnered some support there. And even prior to the race here on Sunday, Tony Stewart and Clint Boyer kind of both backed him up. Tony Stewart, especially as a track owner, series promoter, kind of appalled me that he was saying, hey, it was done. The race was over. It shouldn't, you know, they made their decision when they didn't penalize him at the track. But, again, you come out and outright admit you cheated or did this and it was wrong, I don't see how they can not take action. In my mind, I'm thinking, you know, if I go in and rob a bank and they say, okay, we can't catch the guy, I come out and admit it, they're still going to come get me. I mean, you know, you can't just say, yeah, I did it, but because it happened yesterday, you can't come get me. So I'm with Mike. I see it being upheld. The possibility, if it were me, I think it should have been a little bit stiffer, but that's not my decision. I don't see the rules board with them being reopened, as Mike said, upping it, because I think at that point they'd say, hey, if this is what NASCAR said, they were right in enforcing the rule. That's what they set the penalty at. We're not going to maximize it more because they're sufficient with that being the penalty. But it is a possibility, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people trying to influence public opinion on this. And, you know, Denny has a lot of fans. I do think that we've had situations where people have admitted that they did something on purpose and NASCAR responded to it. Maybe they didn't do it the next day or the next few days. They did it. And I think that when Denny Hamlin went on his podcast and made those comments, he opened the door for a penalty. And I think the part of the penalty is influencing the outcome of a race. He chose to take, and he said this, he wanted Ross Chastain to go backwards with him. He knew he was going to go backwards, and he was taking Ross Chastain with him. He admitted that he was the a little bit, I'm not going to use his word, I'm just going to say DA, that went as many spots back as Ross Chastain did by making that move. So he did take himself and Ross Chastain out of the race, and he admitted to doing exactly that. So where he thinks that he is, and when you influence the outcome of a race, that is detrimental to the sport. So where he thinks that the penalty does not fit the crime, I'm not sure that I get that point because he said it himself that he influenced the outcome of that race. Ross Chastain was running in the top 10 when he made that decision. So he ended up finishing like 24th or 23rd or 24th. So I do think that Hamlin influenced the outcome of that race. I don't see how an appeal board could see it any other way. It doesn't matter that he said it a day or two after that. He said it publicly, and that is detrimental to this sport any time that you admit that you influenced the outcome of that race. So I see him getting the penalty. I agree with Jay. I don't think it was harsh enough, but I do think that if Denny Hamlin, for whatever reason, should decide that to do something like that again, it should be harsher on him. Or if he does something blatantly on the track to influence the outcome of the race, then NASCAR should punish him, and it should be a stiffer penalty. So I do think that if there's a repeat here, that NASCAR is going to escalate that penalty. So, yeah, I don't get it. I understand that people are being supportive of Denny Hamlin. He's part of a bigger community there. And I get that NASCAR is a very supportive community in a lot of ways. But when you violate NASCAR's policies, there's a price to be paid. And I said it before, I'll say it again. Pete Pistone said it correctly. There is freedom of speech, but it doesn't mean that you're free from consequences from that freedom of speech. So, Andy, your thoughts.
Yeah, that's the key here. You know, admission of guilt is what took place on the podcast last week. If, you know, he was worried about not being penalized, he should never have admitted, you know, for everyone to hear that he intentionally wrecked Chastain. So I don't see how you can admit something like that and then get penalized and then, you know, backtrack and say that you didn't do anything wrong. It's mind-boggling, really. The admission of guilt is out there for everyone to see. So I think the penalty will be upheld as it should be, you know, and it's really silly because it was totally preventable by just not talking about it. So in my mind, you know, he fessed up to something voluntarily and NASCAR was, in my mind, forced to give him a penalty. I think that incident could have very easily been seen as a racing incident if no one ever talked about it. I don't think there would have been a penalty, nothing, because, you know, because of the fact that it really didn't look like anything crazy happened. It looked like the two cars got up into the fence and that was that. So, you know, had nothing been said, there wouldn't have been a penalty. We wouldn't even be talking about it right now. But, you know, it was his own admission of guilt that put him in the position that he's in. So I don't see how NASCAR is going to suddenly retract that penalty. I don't even see a reduction. In fact, what he got was really a slap on the wrist anyway. So, honestly, I would suspect that there will be no changes from the appeals commission.
Mike?
I can't help but wonder if the support that Denny's getting from within the industry has a lot to do with who the victim here in this is. It's pretty obvious that nobody likes Ross Chastain. Everybody hates him. They look at yesterday with the incident with Kevin Harvick, how quick everyone was to jump. Ross Chastain wrecked Kevin Harvick. And then they look at the video, and it becomes pretty obvious that, yeah, Ross is right on his bumper, but it's a super speedway. That's kind of what you do. He never made contact with the four. So there was a lot of backpedaling of, oh, well, Maybe Ross really didn't wreck him this time. It was this time. Every other time Ross wrecks him, but not this time. So I'm wondering if this was anybody other than Ross Chastain that Denny Hamlin took out, if people would be as supportive. If he took out, say, Christopher Bell, I guess he wouldn't take out a teammate. But you know what I mean. Somebody other than Ross Chastain, I can't help but think that maybe people wouldn't be as supportive of Denny Hamlin as they are in this circumstance. Either way, I expect this penalty to be upheld, and I really hope that they do.
Okay.
Yeah, and I say I'm with Mike. I didn't hear the podcast of where he went through it, like you said, line by line. If it is overturned, it's going to be one of those of a wording technicality, which would be a real shame to see that happen. I didn't like it when it happened with HMS last year under the deal with William Byron. But we did see the example there where they took away the points because they said the way it was worded, NASCAR couldn't take away points, but did up the money. So maybe we see that, if anything. There is that slight possibility it does get overturned based on the technicality of wording, which it seems like that maybe is where Denny Hamlin is trying to go as well. It'd be unfortunate. I mean, and again, it's out there. We know what he did. We know what he said. I think most of us feel that it was wrong, at least here on Fan for Racing. Apparently the mass broadcast or group of fans don't, which I don't understand because a lot of people aren't particularly big Denny Hamlin fans, again, based on actions. And that, you know, Mike mentioned it. It's your reputation. Kyle Busch has it. I understand why people go against him. Ross Chastain has it for being the aggressive driver. And, you know, it was during the broadcast that Clint Bowyer and all of them up there said it. Hey, we jumped the gun. Ross did not hit him, or I'm trying to think how Tony Stewart said it, of he may have bumped him, but it was not a take him out, run him over type of move. Just, you know, happened to be a bump at the wrong spot or in the wrong way. And they're not even sure if he really did. It looked more like an aero thing. Even Kevin Harvick said it. You know, Harvick was one, as well as Tony Stewart, as the car owner of the number four team, said, yeah, I mean, that even if it was contact, it wasn't a take me out, I'm going to be mad, you know, I owe you one type deal, just happened.
Yeah, I'm one of the few people that like Ross Chastain, and I'm sure it has to do with my history with him. He's been on our radio show a number of times when he was with JD Motorsports, and he's a very likable kind of guy. Every time I've ever seen him at the track, he's got a smile on his face. But he's a little bit like Joey Logano. When he gets behind the wheel of a car, he's a competitor, and he's an aggressive competitor, no doubt about it. I do think some of that was a learning curve for Ross Chastain coming into the Cup Series, and I know he's been there for a while. But the drivers, Denny Hamlin in particular, I think is really jealous of him because of what happened at Martinsville, and I think his comments about taking his hands off the wheel was a direct jab at Ross Chastain when he said he took his hands off of the wheel. Tell me that's not actions detrimental to the sport. Decided to take Ross Chastain back in the field with him. I do think that they will uphold the policy. I don't know what words could be manipulated for that to not be a penalty. But we'll see what happens. He did go by line by line. He said he got up the next morning, he saw the penalty, the email from NASCAR with the exact penalty. He went line by line through it with his group at JGR, and they agreed that he should go ahead and try to appeal it. So he's going to try to appeal it. It'll be interesting. There's, of course, always that possibility that he'll find something that, you know, maybe somebody would agree with him on, but I don't personally see it in the penalty or the words in the penalty and the actions that Denny Hamlin took and the words that he said about intentionally wrecking Ross Chastain. So we'll see what happens. We'll have a lot to talk about again on Thursday night, I'm sure. Andy?
Yeah, not much to really follow up on this one. As you said, Sharon, I do believe that we'll be revisiting this Thursday, whether the penalty's upheld or if it's rescinded.
Okie doke. Mike, you get the next hot topic.
So Atlanta Motor Speedway reconfigured their pit road for this past weekend's race. They didn't change any of the pavement, but they changed the pit road entry from where it used to be coming out of turn four going onto the front stretch. They moved the entry and commitment line and, importantly, the pit road speed line all the way back to the end of the backstretch entering turn three. And I'm wondering what everyone thinks about it, having seen it in action in three races this past weekend.
Okay, real quick, is that on the board?
No, I don't think it is. I know we talked about it in the race chat, but I'm not sure if any of us put it up as an actual hot topic.
Okay. Jay, what are your thoughts about that long road into pit road?
Well, with this now being a super speedway style race and the pack racing, everything like that, I think NASCAR felt like that was the best decision to try and make to prevent issues with them trying to lock up and drop off. Again, when you're talking about normally with that style of racing, you're at a 2.5 or 2.66 mile track, not a mile and a half. So I think they were trying to get ahead of the game. I'm surprised, actually, especially with a lack of practice. I know some of the drivers did it during their qualifying lap to work on it, that we didn't see more issues. There were some where you get caught because with the length of it now, I think they said you'd lose almost 2.5 laps by pitting under green. We didn't necessarily see that come into play. You know, the cautions when they come out can be a major factor in that, and that's just luck of the draw, if you will. I was surprised we didn't see more issues with it. I didn't see a whole lot more as far as speeding penalties or anything like that, so I think the drivers handled it well, quickly accustomed to it, which, again, they're at the top levels of racing, so they're professionals, supposedly, and handled it well. There might still be that one or two, and again, we didn't necessarily see an ill-timed caution where it really, really hosed somebody, but we may still see that in the future. But I think NASCAR did the right thing in trying to prevent a big deal happening, again, by having a crash with somebody trying to jam on the brakes and get into the corner and pull down to pit road at such a high speed.
Okay, Andy?
Yeah, I kind of have the same or similar viewpoint to that. I think that given that Atlanta is now essentially a super speedway race, if you look at the way they would come off turn four, they don't have that wide sweeping entrance like Daytona and Talladega has, where you've got this huge wide paved area to make your entrance to pit road. You don't really have that. It's a bit of an abrupt entrance, and I think that, you know, had things been left the way that they were, there probably would have been problems and some potential crashes. Now, I don't recall that there was an issue last year. I just don't remember. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad change. I did think that there were going to be more speeding penalties because of the fact that the length of the road, the pit road, was drastically increased. With it being, I think, the longest pit road on the circuit, you know, I thought that that could potentially lend itself to more speeding penalties and more issues. But I don't think that there was anything more than what you normally would see on a race weekend. So don't necessarily think it was a bad change, and probably a better scenario than, you know, keeping it the way that it had been.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, keeping in mind that when they did the reconfiguration at Atlanta, they really narrowed the track. So that's why it would have been such an abrupt entry into pit road, especially for a fast track that Atlanta Motor Speedway has become. So I think giving them that longer travel time to get to pit road was a good idea. I think it was very prudent. They also changed the damaged vehicle policy for this particular race. I think it's normally 6 or 7 minutes, and they said that for this race, they were increasing that to 8 minutes for the damaged vehicle policy. So, and they did that because of the length of the entryway into pit road. So, again, I agree with you guys. I think it was the prudent thing to do. I know a lot of drivers were worried coming into this race how they would do with that, especially not having the practice time or, you know, that they would normally get, that they had planned to get because of the rain on Friday. It really, they had minimal issues with it, I thought. Mike?
Well, I agree with you guys, and I agree with NASCAR's reasoning as well. It was unsafe, or at least potentially unsafe, for cars to make the dive for pit road coming off of turn four, peeling out of the pack at speed and trying to make that turn in. I don't think we had any issues with it last year, but there was definitely the potential for some major issues there. With that said, I think that they fixed one safety issue, but they introduced another one. If you watched yesterday, when there were cars on that pit road access apron or whatever you want to call it, that area from turn three entry all the way to pit road, it was alarming how slow they were compared to the pack going by. And at most other races, when you have a car going that slowly on the apron, that usually brings out a yellow. And the reason for that is because of the speed differential between the car moving slowly on the apron versus the rest of the racing pack at speed. We're talking about 45 miles an hour for the pit road speed limit versus a pack of 30-something cars doing 180 or better. If somebody gets loose and wrecks going into turn three at 180-ish, and they collect that driver doing 45 on the pit access road, that could be extremely dangerous. I think it was a smart move to change the pit entry, but I think something else needs to be done there. Maybe look into building some kind of a protected access road or something. I'm not sure. If you look at it, just on the inside of that turn three and four wall, there is a bunch of motorhome parking spots and whatnot. So theoretically, they could build something there, but it would cost them some parking spots. I'm not sure what they want to do, but I would like to see it protected a little bit better in the interest of safety of the drivers driving through to go to pit road. My other concern is more of a operational and competition concern here. during the green flag pit stops that we had yesterday during the Cup Series race, everyone who pitted was losing two laps. As they would come in, they would lose two laps to the leaders, and then as more people pitted, then obviously it cycled through. The problem with this would be if there was a caution in the middle of that green flag pit stop cycle, it could theoretically pin 20 or 30 cars one lap down. You can't take your wave around for two laps. Even if you just – normally, if a caution comes out after you just pitted and you're still a lap down, you can take the wave around, pass the pace car, and get back at the tail end of the lead lap. That option wouldn't exist at Atlanta for these cars that were tracked two laps down. They could take the wave around, get back on one lap down, and now they're racing for that position if the caution were to come back out. From a competition standpoint, I see that as less than ideal. I'm not sure what the solution to that is, because even if they do build an access road to that pit road, it's still a very long way to go at pit road speed in order to get there. Maybe raise the speed limit on the access road and put the pit road speed line somewhere closer to the actual pit road service area. I'm not sure what that solution would be, but going into the July race at Atlanta and probably no later than the next year's spring race at Atlanta, I really hope that NASCAR readdresses this and takes a look at the potential safety issue, as well as how the competition could potentially be affected by an ill-timed caution during a green flag pit cycle.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
Well, that's kind of what I was alluding to. We didn't have that situation develop, but Mike's right. But on the other side of it, it's no different than a short track, say, like Martinsville. Same thing there. If you decide to short pit or pit early, you're going to lose two or three laps. If the caution comes out and at the wrong time, you're down multiple laps versus just one. So I guess that's one they may have to deal with. I do agree with what he was saying, though, of say from turns three into turn four to the front stretch where the pit lane actually starts, maybe have that a in-between speed. Well, you got to be below the line and committed to coming and down on the apron, but the speed doesn't have to hit the 55 or 50, whatever pit lane speed is, until you get to the front stretch. And I hadn't really thought about it from the safety aspect of the great change then between cars on the track, that if they were to slide down, I know normally in that case they'd slide up to the wall first and come down slower, but definitely could be a safety situation. But I would also like to see it where you don't quite lose that. But as Mike was talking, I had to think. I was like, on a short track, it's no different. You go down two, possibly three laps, depending on the track. And they just got to deal with it, I guess. But there are some ways it could be tweaked to maybe improve it to eliminate that.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, like I said, just, you know, I thought it was a positive change. I didn't really see an issue with the new pit road. I think you can see why they did it from a safety standpoint. So probably not a bad change. And ultimately, it probably did lend itself to less accidents and incidents, because the previous design, I think, probably lent itself to there being some issues.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add. I think we've covered it pretty well as far as what the potential problems are and potential remedy is a little bit more difficult. But I do think that they did the right thing, and we'll see if they're able to make any other tweaks to it to make it even better. Again, I don't have a whole lot to add. Mike, you get the final word.
Atlanta's still very much a work in progress. Remember, they just rebuilt this place last year. This is the second year running on the new configuration. And by changing pit road, it's obvious that NASCAR is saying that, yeah, we're still looking at ways to make this place a little bit better. So continue to massage it, continue to improve the process. While you're at it, lay the whip across the guys who are in charge of clearing the racetrack during the truck and Xfinity races. But I think from a safety and competition standpoint, there's still some work to be had at Atlanta Motor Speedway, now the world center of sports entertainment.
Okay. Okay, we're kind of coming up on the top of the hour, so I'm going to go ahead and do the round table at this point. Jay, why don't you go first?
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Huseman, Mopar MJ8, on Twitter and Instagram. mentioned how cold it was at Atlanta. It was just as cold at Jackson Motor Speedway this past weekend, so I was glad
your
I was able to come on here and voice
raceway.
It. Yeah, it was a cold city raceway, I'll tell you that. But we'll be back in action with the Mississippi State Championship Challenge Series Super Late Models this weekend, hoping for a little bit warmer weather.
Okay, Andy?
CB14 fan on Twitter, and as always, good to be back tonight. And I am hopeful to be back on Thursday.
Okay, Mike.
Mike underscore L on Twitter, Mike double underscore O on Reddit. I will take this opportunity to make a quick plug. I was on North Wilkesboro Speedway's webpage today buying my parking passes, and I noticed they had tickets for sale. I'm not sure how many. I'm not even sure if they're still available, but if you're interested in going to the NASCAR All-Star Race this coming May at North Wilkesboro Speedway, keep an eye on North Wilkesboro's website. They may still have some tickets available for you to have an opportunity to go.
Okay, good deal. I know they did some testing there today. They'll be doing some more testing there tomorrow, so I'm kind of anxious to read up on that and how the drivers felt about racing there. I'm sure it had to have a little bit of a mystique to it, given the history of North Wilkesboro. So I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio on everywhere else on social media, and then also our website, fanforracing.com, where we have our player for our Fan for Racing radio show. So you can listen to both the live broadcast as well as the podcast at that location. And a big thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate you taking time to hear what we have to say and hope you enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing it. We did have Tyler Reif on the show earlier tonight. I did ask him, are we pronouncing his last name correctly, Jay? And he told me that we are. So I know Arca says it's Reif, but he told me it is Reif. So it was a pretty good little interview. He won the race out at Phoenix Raceway. He said he's raced that track before, and he's looking forward to coming back, needless to say. But he gave a really good interview for somebody who's new in the sport. And we learned a few things about where he's getting a little bit of help from, too, especially out there at Phoenix Raceway. So if you get a chance to listen to that, I'll give you a hint. It is a NASCAR Cup Series driver. If you want to go back and listen to that, we talked to him during our third half hour of the show here tonight. And I hope everybody gets a chance to listen. Jay and I will be back on air this Thursday night for the preview show, and we're definitely looking forward to that. We start at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and we hope you'll join us again for Hot Topics, at not only for the preview part of the show, but for the Hot Topics at 10 o'clock as well. So with that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a night here on Fan for Racing Radio. And we'll look forward to talking to everybody on Thursday.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.